Okay. Good afternoon. Ottawa never lets you forget it's the winter semester. Yes. I just got back last night from Nashville, Tennessee. It's a little warmer there than it is here. Yeah, I think it was around 21, 22 or so the weekend. Yeah. Celsius. Around upper 60s, lower 70s in U.S. speak. Anyway. So today... So as I teach this class, I'm learning more about how to teach this class, of course. That's the nature of the beast. And so one of the things that seems to be a recurring problem now is... Well, there's two sets. There's some of you who seem to be stuck in the early stages of your application design. And then others of you who seem to be stuck at later stages where you have very specific architectural issues and you're trying to figure out how to approach them and you're getting stuck. So I feel like both groups may be able to be helped by stepping back a little bit and talking a bit, not about the technology, but about How do you think about how to create a web application? What's your design process? Where should you start and where should you go? And see it, and hopefully that will help some of you all in thinking about things. In some ways, this is just like designing any program, and I don't know actually how much people talk about designing full applications in any of the courses.
3004.
3004. Okay. Well, not really. No. You talk, it's software engineering, but like in 2004, your spec is pretty fixed, right?
Well, it's like object-patterned
software. You're a pattern. It's software patterns. It's like, okay, you know. Software patterns are very important. And the reason why they're very important is because they help keep you from reinventing the wheel. Someone else has figured out a good way of solving problem X. Use the right pattern. But yes,
there's also the fact that for 3004 you're expected to decompose, like do system decomposition, which when you've been exposed to the whole subsystems concept, then designing an app becomes easier because you realize it's modular and what.
Yeah, I'm kind of think of decomposition as a strategy. Has that really been discussed?
In our 3004, it was discussed at length.
So this is a second year class. And frankly, 3004 in many ways is too late to be talking about such things as a first try. It's like, I mean, 3004 should be where you're saying, okay, you kind of know how to decompose a problem and build it on your own, but now here's the way other folks have done it. Here are standard practices. So now you can hopefully up your game. But you first have to know how to play. So let's discuss kind of generic strategies and how to play and I'll try to kind of not do things just for not just for the beginners here. Well, actually, I suspect the mix here is it's hard to know exactly the skill mix. Some of you know exactly what you're doing, some of you really don't. So anyway, so I have two strategies with this. One is I can start talking about a generic problem. We can pick an application area and just sort of start from scratch. Or I can start trying to deal with specific design problems you have. So my thought was I'd start with something generic, and then after going through that, I would start fielding questions on specific design issues you all have been having.
Sure.
Does that sound reasonable?
Did we make our way through all of the questions that you took on the board?
We did not. And I want to go through, I still want to go through some of those, but again, it's like these...
Yeah.
Like these sort of general kind of what am I doing kind of things is bothering me.
What is my team name?
Yeah. So let's... So first we gotta pick an app. We had to pick an app. And let's pick an app.
Let's make StarCraft 2.
Let's pick an app that's a little...
Not that game.
Let's not do a game, but let's do something that's something that you... don't use every day.
Hot or not.
No, I'd prefer not. Let's say not. I'm thinking of something that isn't, not something that's necessarily a web application. Actually, let's. I want to take a standard desktop application. I want something actually a little more complicated. We're doing the architecture and kind of thinking about the
calendar
basic
calendar and scheduling application.
Boring.
I'm fine.
How about a music player?
Ooh. Yeah. Sure. That you can have.
Let's just start trying to architect a music player. The reason why I'm thinking of this is because this has various real-time requirements. It requires a somewhat user interface. Requires a server backend if you want to be able to access all things. And I think in general it's not been done that well. I mean, there's definitely streaming, web applications and stuff like that.
GrooveShark? SoundCloud is pretty fantastic.
Well, SoundCloud, does it keep your music? I mean, there's a lot of good streaming apps, but they seem to be more oriented towards there's all this music out there, as opposed to this is my application. Let's think of this as a music application not oriented towards just listeners, but to creators of music.
SoundCloud?
You're right.
Others have access to it.
Okay, I'm trying to get into a space where you all don't have too many preconceived notions of how it's supposed to be done. Because it's always easier to design things when you aren't trying to do something that's already been done well.
I think GrooveShark has this feature, but I haven't actually seen it yet. But I was thinking of a music player that
step back.
Share your playlist.
Step back. Details. So. Music management. Management editor. So, some sort of super music app. So this obviously is a very ambitious kind of application to build. If you tried building it for a class like this, you'd go nuts if you tried to do all of it. But what I want to do is when I want to think about the architecture of this kind of app. What would you want to do where? What would it look like? Could you build this in something like Node? Where do the pieces go? So, first stage, when you have this sort of app, any sort of app, I tend to think it's good to think from an interface perspective. Not necessarily to have a fully worked out interface, but you have to have use cases, right? You have to know, what are you going to try doing with this app? If you don't at least have a couple of use cases, you don't even know what problem you're trying to solve, right? So let's take simple use case, listen to music, right? Find some music. Given a string, or maybe given a sample of some kind. There's like SoundCloud in particular kind of does as well. You want to listen, you want to find. What else might you want to do?
Create.
Create, edit. So we can visualize this in our heads, what kind of interface this is going to look like. We've got some sort of window, we've got some sort of widgets, we'll be able to hit play, we'll be able to hit record maybe. Okay. Basic app. Now, if you were doing this as a desktop app, you'd say, okay, now I know the sort of functionality, sort of split it up, let me try doing these as separate modules, I'll make the interface, I'll build the code. When you're making a web app, you have to take another step. which is, what are you going to try doing on the client? And what are you going to try doing on the server? So, what is, so let's first think, we'll go over here, we'll say, client over here. Give me some functionality that needs to happen.
We should probably actually play the music on the client side.
Okay, yeah.
Unless our system administrator wants to listen to it.
Okay. So play is going to happen over here. But the store of the music... Actually, it's a very relevant thing to think about. Very relevant. So this is going to store data and metadata. Now we need this to be the canonical store of this because we want to have it accessible from any web browser, right? It's a web app. So it's going to have some store of it, but we want to still be able to play things here. Now notice I've got these boards kind of far apart. That's actually kind of by design here, because you should always think of these things as far apart. You should always be thinking of your client and server as connected by a poor communication channel. It might be relatively high bandwidth, but it's probably going to be laggy, and it might be intermittent in various ways. And so you want your user experience not to be degraded by that architecture. You have to constantly be thinking about this split. Because this means that here is the stuff that is low latency. And the stuff over here is persistent. And that's what you really have to separate. So what's the straw that connects these two? What's the channel? It's HTTP. HTTP basically gets and posts. It's your API. That's what you're going to do here.
Would it not be would UDP still be using HTTP for control? On top of it, because if you're streaming, you probably don't want to be streaming over HTTP.
Okay, so this is a good question. You're now building a web app. If you've done generic client-server programming, you might say, well, I know all these other network protocols. Actually, last week, you heard about them all. TCP versus UDP in particular. UDP is nice, because it's inherently lower latency, because you don't have the whole connection set up, you don't have all the buffering on either side, you don't have retransmissions. It just gets sent, and if it's going to get there by the fastest path possible if you send it by UDP. So why don't I do this by UDP?
You might
want to
pause or rewind.
No, UDP would support those. I'm saying UDP is in general a very good way of doing multimedia. Because you can deal with drop, because you can determine your own synchronization. Like, some data is coming through, you get what you want, then you can ask for more. It's particularly good for things that you can tolerate loss. Like, for example, you're doing music. And let's say music at one time period, you lose some packets. So now they get retransmitted, and it's 5 seconds later. Are you going to play those now? No, you're going to throw them away. You had a hiccup, and playing those later makes a bad situation worse. You had a loss of quality, maybe even had a dropout, and you just want to move on. Right. But with something like TCP, it's going to keep transmitting that old data. There's no way to tell it, you know, those bytes you tried sending me, I don't care anymore. They're not useful anymore. So UDP, in a sense, is better, strictly speaking, for most multimedia stuff, particularly real time. And I will tell you this now, if you're doing this on the web, you're probably going to avoid UDP. Desperately. Anyone know why? You're in a web browser. Do web browsers normally support, you know, UDP? No. I mean, you're starting with things like WebSockets. There's newer things. Then you can start getting into things. But, like, that's just a brand new standard. It's not going to work with older browsers or anything like that. I mean,
you just slap on a flash player.
Slap a flash player on. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just get rid of all the standard stuff. And you just go like, it's just a recipe for a mess. I mean, you want to be sticking to standards, ideally to web, you know, well-popularized standards. And unless you absolutely have to, don't mess with the network protocol. And that's part of the art of the design of a web application, is to make do with what you have. And what you have are gets and posts, which really means you're transmitting small or large files between the client and server. I mean, the file can really essentially be a key-value pair, or it can be, you know, big chunks of data. But that's what you're exchanging between the client and server. And you have to make your app work within that. So that really means if you want to be able to do some interactive stuff, you just chuck whatever data you want at the client and let it deal with it. And then as it deals with it, it may say, oh, now I need to update the store. It will send messages back in terms of updates to the store. But don't go UDP, don't go that. I mean, it's not to say that doesn't happen. There's even newer standards that are trying to do this. You know, there's WebRTC, some of you may have heard of. This is generic browser-to-browser, you know, video and audio chat. They're doing all kinds of crazy things at the network level. But they're hacking the browser to do it. You don't want to be doing that. So,
So does something like YouTube use HTTP for...
Yep. There's another basic reason why you want to use TCP over HTTP. Is because that is what gets through everyone's firewall. If you don't use that, there's a good chance you might get blocked. You might get blocked by a corporate firewall or a home firewall or somewhere along the line, someone's going
to
mess you up.
If you can, to go through port 80.
Yeah. And even more than going through port 80, you ideally want to make it so that it's cacheable where possible. You want to be able to have things be able to offload the load on your server, if possible. You want things to be able to, let's say, you know, you're running it, you know, you're accessing it via a proxy server. Like, for example, let's say Carlton, to reduce bandwidth, used a proxy server. Well, actually, Carlton doesn't seem to have anything like that, but many corporations do. So, what I don't seem to have is because you can do transparent proxying, and it can be hard to tell that this is what's happening. It's actually caching things and sending them to you without going out to the internet.
How long it takes for Google to load up when you connect to CU wireless, I'm pretty sure they're not caching anything.
Yeah, okay. But corporations will do that, and you don't want your application to break when these things happen. And they're designed to work with well-behaved web applications. So be a well-behaved web application. Stick to the generic stuff. So what will it look like to listen? Let's first start talking. What will it look like to listen to a piece of music? What's the basic organization of this will happen?
You get it from the server, you download it to the client,
just
click it.
Right. So the basic idea of listen. send to client. Okay. Great. So problem solved, right?
Well, you have to.
Are you downloading the whole thing? Yes?
Can you download the player first?
Well,
the audio tag.
This is, yes, except you're in the audio tag. Browsers do have the ability to play a certain amount of audio by themselves.
But
you assume there's a little bit of your code sitting in the client. Depends on how much you need. But just as a basic notion, we're just saying. Yeah, the web app is loaded. They selected the song. We're going to hit play. What's the server going to do?
It's going to take the file that's going to be played, sends it to the client.
But now you should see a little problem with this. How big is this file? You know, maybe. Depends on how big it is. Maybe the audio file is a few seconds long. Maybe it's many hours long. Maybe it's stored with a really high bit rate. Maybe it's not. You don't want to have one solution for the files that you can load quickly and another solution for the ones that won't load quickly. You couldn't just say, you're waiting. The whole thing's got to load.
Yeah, no, you buffer for 10 seconds of play.
So what does that mean, buffer for 10 seconds of play?
Make sure you get 10 seconds worth of that file. Verified manner. So,
well, right, I know, but I'm saying it's from the server's perspective. Byte rate. So, what it means is you're not just going to be downloading the entire file, you potentially want to be able to say, I want this much of the file. So, will the client ask for all of the file at once? No. It'll ask for the first chunk of the file. Because in HTTP, you can say, I want this byte range file. It says, how big is this file I'm trying to play? Oh, it's this big. Okay, now I'm starting at this offset. So, let's start playing this much. So, give me a second worth of audio. Or a couple of seconds worth of audio. And so, it'll estimate this using this. You can have some calculations on the client, and it will ask for that byte range to send it from the server. Yes?
Have the thing the server for metadata first so that it can run the calculation of the offset.
Exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You also want to store on the client so that you can go back and have access to it.
So you want to do some caching. So the caching is kind of provided for free a bit in the sense of you access URLs. As long as the URL is persistent, then the client will say, okay, you did a get of this URL before. I'm doing the exact same get of it. The browser generally says, oh, and the server said something that you can cache this. The browser will probably cache it. You can't count on caching, but it's a hint to the browser. So, but the key thing is there, you notice your get request should be identical to a past get request. Because it doesn't know you add one character to the end of the get request. It thinks it might be a different one. You can't cache it. So what's the basic architecture? You're setting... So playing is... Play. Send metadata. And so, we get the metadata.
Compute offset.
Compute, yeah. Okay.
So it knows what the file looks like.
The byte range would be different based on the bit rate of the MP3.
Well,
you
just,
want 10 seconds worth.
Well, think of it this way. You want to put up a progress bar, a slider bar, so you can slide to different parts of the music. What's the mapping between that and the file? You want that to be, I move it here. Okay, I'm at this percentage of the file that corresponds to this fraction of the byte range, and it knows something about the structure of the file and the type, and so it requests that information.
Convenient to ignore compression algorithms, which
now here's a question. Let's assume that the browser is really dumb. Let's say it doesn't know. Let's assume we don't have code for playing fragments of files. What if the only thing we can play is fully formed, wave files that have their own distinct header and trailer? You know, like wave files actually. And let's say MP3 files. Those have distinct formats.
So it can only play full, MP3, files. And once you start playing it, it plays the whole thing. Are we stuck? Exactly. Who would generate the MP3 files? The server can. The server can take the file and split it up into lots of other smaller files and send those to the client as needed. So where we're saying byte ranges, really what it's requesting for is requesting a fragment to play, and whatever format it can play is what it requests. So this is where some of the workload of what you do on the client and server comes in. Depending upon how sophisticated your client is, your server can be dumber. But sometimes you may want your server to be smarter because it can reduce the work that happens in the client. Like, for example, if you want to split up an audio file into lots of small pieces, that could be done asynchronously. The file gets uploaded to the server, and it may take, a minute. Or a day, depending upon kind of the latency. But the server can run a job; it can process the file and then send it. Mm-hmm.
So, is this actually done? Is it like you send in an MP3 and the server side chunks it into 1 second fragments and then regurgitates it back?
No.
Whenever it's played?
No. Not normally. Because what's the classic way you play audio in a browser has been you have a flash player, right? And now newer standards allow you to play audio in a little more of a nicer way. But I'm just saying that it's in principle possible to change how these things work if you're willing to do more work on the server. And that's the thing you always have to be investigating when designing this. You can't say, I just want my server to do this. Or I just want my client to do this. Your server is limited in what it can do because of the latency in its connection to the client. It can't interactively decide what's going to go on the screen where, at least not if you want your application to work well. Similarly, your client is limited because it's running in a web browser. And so you have to figure out what the capabilities are here before you figure out what the server is going to do there. So kind of the first stage of doing this sort of development is figuring out what the role of these particular pieces are. And the next stage, let's say we're doing this listen part, is what are the capabilities of the client? You make a stupid web server that just sends like simple audio things, and you try creating clients that can play the audio. And you work on that. And then you figure out what does the server need to provide for me to get a reasonable playing experience. You fake it up. And then as you understand that, then you can do that. And of course, when you do this, if you're developing it with the client and server on the same machine, you have to make sure that you account for loss. You account for delays. So you'd maybe want to make your web browser, your web server, not be so reliable. Have it put a little delay loop before it replies. Have it drop a connection, have it drop a request or two. How does the client behave? You may not want to do that you know, fully at the beginning, but these are the kind of things you'd be thinking about when you're architecting it.
Now let's say I want to edit.
What am I going to do?
Probably download the whole thing. Really? So here's a question. If you're editing audio, are you necessarily listening to it? No. Oftentimes, what are you doing? You edit audio by looking at a waveform or some other representation, which is on the which is on in your screen, and then maybe you set up cuts, you chunk it here, and then after you've done this, you play it. So what you actually are combining is interacting with a representation of the audio and then doing the listen on parts of it. You reuse your existing listen capability. And where does the editing actually happen? So the requests for edits happen on the client, but potentially the actual edits will happen on the server. And you'll potentially want that to happen, especially if you're doing edits on a rather large multimedia file, because you can't download it. Now, will this potentially put a strain on your server? Yes, because it deals with big files, but hey, it's an editing app. Now, if you want to download, you could say, well, I'll download it to the client and let it edit it there. Well, if you do that, you're going to have to wait for it all to download. Unless you do something in the background and caching and stuff, and there's only something the browser can store and things. Yes?
Well, let's say you add something to the file.
Mm-hmm.
And edit it. Wouldn't the offset that the rest of the file past that point be off? So the client doesn't know or the server doesn't know.
You have to update them. You're thinking exactly right. Like, if you now insert a little bit of audio here, now, the client can do its calculations, it'll send it to the server. Maybe the server client won't know exactly how the files changed because maybe it requires some more processing, but then the server will have to do that.
So everything it's already had, like it's already cached, has to be...
Might have to be updated. Maybe you can't keep the old URLs. Maybe all the old audio data can't be cached anymore. Maybe you can be clever and figure out how to make sure the old get URLs still work. Yes? You can, but you don't know if they're going to play the whole thing. Well, no. You don't know exactly. Like, maybe they're just going to play the parts where they did the cuts.
Yeah, so like you said, it's just now the chunks.
Maybe. But maybe they won't have a chance to listen to it right then. Maybe they're doing quick edits. And they go. I mean, it's not to say you don't necessarily want to download it in the background. No, exactly. What I'm saying is it's not that, you're getting into another aspect, which is actually a very important, which is known as predictive interfaces.
There might be another generic term that's used for that. But the idea of a predictive interface is it predicts what the user is going to do next and tries to prepare for it, as opposed to preparing for any possible eventuality. So what you're saying is that in an audio app, if you're doing some editing, the audio around where you're doing the edits is probably going to be listened to. So rather than wait for the user to request to play that particular bit of audio, download it in the background. Anyone do an app that does this a lot?
Yeah.
Google Everything. All the Google properties do this extensively. And the reason they do this is because they're having to mask high latency. So in the background, it just downloads all kinds of things. I think, I'm not sure under what conditions it still does this. I think Chrome basically does this. You visit a Google search page, it downloads the top, like, 10 links. Visits them without you actually ever loading them. It just loads them in the background. So when you click on the link, it's already loaded the page. And you go like, wait a second. I'm only going to click on one of the links. It downloaded 10 of them. Well, makes Google's Chrome stats look a lot better than they would otherwise. The browser usage.
Well, also performance.
But again, you care about the user performance, and you're basically saying to hell with bandwidth. We'll trade bandwidth for latency. We'll load everything in the background. And this is something that your app can do too. Because you can say, yeah, I might end up downloading a lot more of the song than I would strictly need to otherwise in order for the, you know, in order to facilitate editing, but I want it to be really responsive. So I'm going to throw more data at the client as much as I can. And that can work. That's a perfectly reasonable thing, but realize what you're trading off. It's not a costless decision. You're increasing the bandwidth usage of your app. You're increasing the load on your servers. You're making them send more data than they would otherwise in order to make the client more responsive. And that also means now you're having to put in either heuristics or you're having to put in actual predictive algorithms into your interface saying what thing should be done next. Because if you do every possible thing, you'll kill your servers. They'll just be sending way too much data. And the clients won't work very well because they can't store it all. You don't want, you know, what could Google, you know, Gmail do? It could download all of your email into the web browser. You might access some of it. But if you did that, you know, yeah, you know the consequence. So, especially if you did it over a mobile connection. You don't want your app to be a bandwidth hog. It makes people unhappy.
There's latency between them getting unhappy, though.
Well, yeah, yes, there is. Yes?
An applicable example to this is I hate how music players have a playlist and don't preload the next song.
Yes.
If we're buffering our current song and we
buffer the next song,
buffer it to the end, let's start buffering the beginning of the next song.
At least buffer 30 seconds.
Exactly.
Enough to be able to... No, exactly. So many web apps are done badly because they don't think about these things.
iTunes should do it, and it doesn't.
Because, and this is the thing about a web, you have to think about these things differently. You have to think ahead. It's literally, your app has to plan for the future. It's like budgeting. You have to budget your bandwidth, budget your latency. And figure out, but in this case you're saying, what will I need this next for? I have to have the money to pay the rent. And that rent I have to pay on Monday. So if I go out over the weekend and party all weekend and spend all my money, I won't be able to pay my rent. That would be bad. So your app kind of has to think that way. If I download all these files right now, I won't have the bandwidth to download, the next bit of audio that it's requesting. And I'll be seeing low, and they'll be saying, wait, I've asked for the next song. I'm still busy buffering the current song. This is something you don't have to do on a desktop because everything is low latency, relatively speaking. And that's why I said latency is the driving thing in the design of your web app. Now, I can go into further detail about this, but I just kind of wanted just to design your app. I've shown you all the pieces. You've seen, everything there. It's just, what is your page going to look like? Mock up your page. Think about what the server will need to do with it. Say, what are your gets and posts going to be? And then try building those. Start with the client side purely, and then, but start with a simple one. Then build your server to support it, and then expand your client, expand your server, and go back and forth. Your persistent store, do a simple one with your backend database. That's a nice thing about using something like MongoDB, if you choose to use something like that, is that you can expand the schema as you need. So, how about specific issues?
Could we go more into the data itself, like what would you store in the metadata? that apply to its own model. So, but what kind of things would you store for the metadata and how would it be useful? I'm asking specifically because we're doing something.
So you're doing a music application. You want to be able to give a list of songs in some way, right?
Yeah, but the metadata is specific for that file.
Right, so where are you going to store that metadata? On the server, but where are you going to store the server? So you have it implicitly stored in, let's say, the MP3 file. Is your web application going to look at the MP3 file, the server side, every time a request is done? That would be bad. You don't want to be parsing the MP3 file every time. So where is it going to look? Where do you want it to look? You want it to look in a database. So what you do is part of uploading the file to the server is you parse it. You extract the metadata and put it into a database. So then, whenever the client requests something, you just do a query to the database for whatever they want. Give me a list of all of the artists of all the songs. Well, now you have a database. You can do that sort of query. All the kind of queries you want to do on the client are now easily done on the server. And if you want to make sure certain queries are fast, you make sure the database has indexes for the appropriate request. But basically, anything involving metadata should not touch the actual file. It should just touch a database.
But so the database you have separate stores just one for the actual data and then linked by some.
Well, so you need to think of when you upload data to a web application, the data in general gets transformed. First of all, it gets parsed and gets split up so that further requests can be done, handled more quickly. So one thing that's obvious to do is to do extract metadata. Another thing maybe is to extract keywords. Maybe another thing could be to split it into lots of small chunks so that they can easily be sent. If for some reason you want to send a standalone audio file, you want to pre-process it. If like someplace like YouTube, they'll transcode it. Maybe they'll compress it. They'll do lots of things. You might keep the original file around. Like, think of a photo sharing service. Does it keep just one copy of the picture around? No, it makes like dozens. Different resolutions, thumbnails, things that downsamples it. It does all kinds of processing. And it stores the original. That's the kind of work your application has to do, because you have to think about what kind of requests want to be satisfied by the client, and you want to pre-process so that each of those requests can be done very quickly. This is, again, with a Node app. A Node app shouldn't be doing much computation. It should just be fulfilling the requests. This sort of computation happens in another program. You have another program that goes through and processes these things in batch. And the Node application can check to see, has this been processed or not? But it's not doing the actual processing unless it's very lightweight. You can do some amount of computation and not notice things, but doing heavy multimedia processing, you don't want that in the main event. Bad idea. So again, it's all about latency. Things are going to take a long time, increase the latency, so you put it off in another process. Design issues. Some of you have been asking, I know, about I want to request a lot of data from the server, but I don't want to request it all at once. How are you going to do this? So this is basically, when you're getting a lot of data from the server and you want to update the page interactively, this is what we're talking about by AJAX. And that's the one piece we haven't actually shown. We did have a tutorial. Yeah, we did. So let me show you AJAX.
So.
Did we not? No, I guess jQuery and Ajax are not the same thing. But
no.
jQuery is normally how you do Ajax.
Great.
We had an Ajax specific tutorial. But have you all worked through all the tutorials? That's something that's going to change the next run. Question? Yes?
So is this how YouTube works? If it takes the next song, it kind of pre-buffers it? Is that how it's done on YouTube?
I don't think YouTube predicts the next one. Does Vimeo, Vivo do that?
No.
No.
No one is, it's like a serious feature that everyone lacks.
The reason, but I think there's a very simple reason why they lack it.
Bandwidth.
I think the idea is that doing the prediction right would just probably double their bandwidth usage. And yeah, but people don't necessarily follow the playlist. They probably have evidence that people aren't very good at following their playlists. Mm-hmm.
Something that's slightly related to this. So we're all working on our projects, and the projects are all different. And you have mentioned that you would want a minimal subset of things that our web apps do.
Mm-hmm.
Did I just miss this, or like it'd be great to have a list of, you know, I want every web project to have at least these
server
and maybe like
client.
Two.
That was it.
Pardon?
Server database client.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay.
That's why there's the whole 10 points off.
Or
for not doing it. So you all saw the thing I sent out, right?
Yeah.
So I can go through that. Did anyone look at the requirements? You know, should I go through the project requirements? Is it worth, or otherwise we're going to talk about design, you know, other kind of design problems you have.
There's one thing that was out of 3 points that I'm not sure how it's...
I'll start projecting in a second. Second. That's what I have here. One, two. What? This is killing me here. Oh, I know why. Oh. I don't have my old calendar here. Anyway, I don't. Yeah, 1864. I'll just go through this. So the things that are in the project. So there's a README. Was it README? Dependencies. Dependencies, files, architecture, motivation, and extensions. And this is all 31113. So what you should see from, and then there's also for
cosound quality and functionality.
Actually, this is really more of a style. So, the ones that have are worth 1 point are essentially there to say, you should have this in some reasonable form. I'm not expecting anything fancy. I'm just expecting it to be documented. And so what are we looking for there? We're looking for, so the dependencies.
What's your application?
Is the package.json not the dependency?
Yeah.
It's basically the dependencies. And generally that should be enough. Except that you might need some, there might be some other things you stuck in there. What I really want is not just the, for example, use MongoDB. It's kind of implicitly there saying that you've got you're using the, requiring the Mongo server and saying, but, what sort of setup do you require for it? What assumptions do you make about it? I want to know, in order for me to bring your app up, what do I need to have? And Node tells you some of these things, but you potentially are composing other things. So, do you require certain things in your web browser? Does it only work in certain browsers, for example? Which I hope is not so much the case, but it'll be for some of you. Yes?
Should licenses be in there?
Yeah, I don't think that. This is why I put this as a draft. I knew I'd forgotten that. Licenses should be. Well, that's in your. The dependencies shouldn't have licenses, but I think I should have. It probably should be in the.
I'm pretty sure there's a way to have Node get all the licenses for the dependencies.
That's true, but what I'm looking for is just general IP. Because I'll have to think about where to put that in. That is something I want to know, is who owns the IP in this, the intellectual property. Whose code is this? This is stuff you all wrote. This is stuff you got from here. What are the licenses on it? Did you grab some images from some online source or something?
It could just be docs/licenses.mp.
I don't want to add another file.
Oh.
Well, I'll think about it.
If there was no explicit license for I have a piece of code that I pulled up off the web page. It's quoted as I got it. It's by this guy from this URL. And on the page it says, whatever, use it if you want to. There's no MIT, there's nothing. There's no specific license. I think everything on Stack Overflow is Creative Commons. I think it was off some blog.
If it's off a personal blog and they say whatever it is, you can that's fine. Just you give attribution.
Of course.
Give attribution and you say they said this. Then it's, and you would say the date you retrieved it. Then documentation and stuff. But generally those are for things that are small code fragments.
Yeah.
So for small code fragments it tends not to be an issue. Because there's only a limited amount of copyright you can claim on small amounts of code. Exactly. Those sort of things are not, it's better, but it's good to cite your sources.
I use modulo 2 in my code.
Exactly.
Technically, we should have the dependencies already, right? I mean, the project, the first milestone was either the first milestone or the
The whole point of this is I'm not trying to make you do lots of work extra than what you were planning to do otherwise. I just want you kind of to document what you've done. This isn't a research project. This is, you built an application. Tell me about it. So the README, what I say, so this is just, we gotta grade this thing. this is in a private repo, so I think it's okay, but I want to know, who did it. Who's in the team, your name, stuff. But the dependencies, you're talking about the files, this is just simply, why did I put this in here versus, you have the I have the list of files by looking at your repository, right? Why do I have this files thing?
No, well, no, because the fact is, when your repository, a lot of the files are potentially auto-generated. I mean, there's pulled in by dependencies, but there's also the Express framework stuff, and depending on what else you've run. So I want to know what you explicitly edited, as opposed to things that you just sort of grab. It's like, okay, yeah, there's jQuery here. Like, it's very possible that you have a package incorporated that is your packet, that is basically what an upstream provider did, but there was a bug in it. And so you modified a couple of lines in one file in order to make it work with your app. I just see, you know, this big thing. It's like, okay, you didn't do anything there. I was like, no, actually, you have to modify it in this way. So this is telling me about those files. And then the person, you know, what's in each file. So it's like, this is this. I think I should make that explicitly say what you changed. If it's a file that you just modified slightly. Then an architecture diagram. Give me a picture. Tell me how this fits together. Something. I mean, it doesn't have to be anything fancy, but just something to visualize what you're looking at. Okay. So, if you really want to, you could draw it in a piece of paper and scan it. I'm not that picky, but.
Just draw the database and the server hugging and high-fiving the client.
Yeah. Okay. But what I'm really thinking, rather than fit a specific thing, I want to know how you conceptualize your application. How do you divide it up? Because if you program anything, you have a mental model about how the pieces fit together. Show me that mental model. If you don't have one, you really need to get one.
You get them pretty cheap.
Yeah, you don't want those. So the motivation. Tell me a bit why you bothered building this. Why is this interesting? Because I'm hoping that you're building an app that you actually care about in some way, at least in some small way. I mean, maybe it's just a demonstration thing, but you know, what are your goals? What were you trying to build? I mean, if your project is more modest, you're going to get 2 out of 3 points. If you don't have so much to say, the motivation. So again, this is the whole thing of saying, how do you get maximum points versus getting pretty good points? I mean, if you just sort of say, well, in order to learn about Node and Node and things, I wanted to build a simple app which is had this thing and it just sort of let the user input this and that, and it's just, I want to just make a simple sort of recipe app and just put it in the database and things like. Okay, fine, I'll give you 2 out of 3 points. Sure. But it's like, I am an avid, I cook all the time, I use all recipes, and I hate their web interface, and I really want to make it look like this, and they do this wrong, and I wanted to see if I could try making a better interface. Like, okay, that's more like 3. So. What?
Yeah. Just take like half an hour, be really passionate, get into your keyboard, and then we're good.
Well, but as long as you have something to be passionate about. There should be a problem that I have identified that you think is interesting to build. I mean, how do you code anything worth a damn if you don't think it's worth coding? It's still not going to be worth a damn.
Well, you work for IBM and you just...
And you see the code that comes out.
Production ready.
Oh, God. Yeah. This is what I was saying is, if you want that A or A+, you got to show me something more than okay. I'm showing you, if you just sort of go through the motions and kind of give me something, you're going to get a B. Okay, and if you're going through the motion, you should be very happy that you're getting a B as opposed to a D. But if you that's motivation, then extensions. Again, this is talking about how you take what you built and you make it into something more. If you give me a list, well, you could add, you could add a save function. You could add, things, you could change the formatting so it was a little prettier because, I use a really ugly style sheet and stuff. Or something. If you do that, okay, I'll give you 2 points. Fine. But you give me some interesting notions and tell me how you actually built your app to be extensible and stuff, then okay. Good. Then you can get through. But that's the difference I'm looking for. Looking for the signs that you cared.
Passion.
Yeah. And actually follow through on it, as opposed to, I don't necessarily just want you just going cheerleading and stuff. I want Joe actually did something.
Yeah,
okay.
Those are all, like, why and where you might head.
So again with the README, you know, I say a one-paragraph summary of the project that gives a high-level view of what the program is supposed to do and how it works, including main package dependencies. So now, if you write a nice, you know, the README is going to be an easier one to get full marks on. But if you just do a nice, you know, summary of it and stuff, it's like, okay, wow, I really get this project now. I want to give you 3 points. They're going like, oh, okay, what does it really do? Okay, you kind of give me this basics. And So for the 3 point ones, it's like 3, I'm impressed. 2, okay, you did it. 1 point, oh, please. You expect me to give you marks for that? And 0, okay, you didn't do it. So, and then this, you know, code style and quality and overall functionality, it's like if your code works and basically has the parts and, you know, doesn't kind of crash and stuff like that, it's like, okay, I can give you 3 points. If you're going to get 4 points, show me something interesting. You know, show me an app that actually is really, you know, more than just works. It should be a nice, it should do something, you know. Some of you all are doing some rather impressive apps, and I'm expecting to give you 4 marks for those. Some of you I know are probably just sort of getting started with your code. I'm not expecting to give you 4 marks. Sorry. You know, there's... I'd prefer not to, because some of you might get a little intimidated, frankly. I mean, I think it'll be good to, actually, I would like to spend a little bit of time to have people maybe showing off some of their apps, because some people are really, well, some of them have very ambitious plans, and I haven't seen how much actually works. So that's also the, that's also a question.
There is a demo milestone.
That's true. We should be coming up very soon, so. So my plan is I'm going to mark the projects. I'm going to,
But you have so many TAs.
I do have a lot of TAs, but this is, and actually, well, the thing is the TAs are giving you half your marks. They're giving you all the milestones. So, and I want to, and I need to figure out what you guys are actually doing. And so I'm going to have to spend a good amount of time. I mean, I'm going to have, they'll be helping a lot with grading the final. You can get help with grading the final. You just can't offload it completely to them to grade. So I will be doing part of the marking for the final, but I will not be doing all the marking for the final. But I plan on looking at all your projects. Because the other problem is I have no way of calibrating the projects otherwise if I don't go through and do them all, because there's so many TAs and what do they all look like. So I have to also adjust that, you know. I have to adjust for a lot of things, so. So yeah, make my life easy. If you make it easy for me to look at the stuff, then I'll be very happy. If I start having to like read lots of bad grammar and other things and stuff like that, then I just sort of start getting grumpy, and then points start going.
It's
away.
Either 0 or 100, then it's good.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, so yeah, you know, overall style and quality, overall functionality. That's 8 points for seeing like what kind of good app did you make. Something that actually does something really nice, or does it something that just sort of works? I mean, you can get 6 points if it basically is functional and your code's nicely documented and laid out and stuff. If you want those extra points, you're going to have to do a nice job. So again, if you're looking to even just get an A in this class, there's a lot of other marks here. This is just 20%.
You know, but do the pro.
So on the weekly quizzes, I have not been giving to you since the midterm.
Yeah,
and part,
yeah.
And basically, it was partially like putting them together. It's like, what am I quizzing you on? And, like everything I came up with was like trivial, or I mean, I had actually covered most of the material I want you to really learn in the first half, and then I'm not getting into nuance of things. And so the one thing left is I want to, you know, have you test some on databases, and that. And so what I'm planning on doing is probably having a thing that would be optional. You want to improve your grade in the next week or so, because right, all, the other thing is I don't necessarily want you all spending lots of time studying. I want you to spend lots of time
coding. They want you to build your project. The best way to learn this stuff is actually to build things. And I want to help you with that. Yes?
What's it due?
April 10th.
Last day of classes.
Last day of classes.
Oh,
did you specify a specific hour?
I did not specify a specific hour. So that means, so generally I tend to say the full 24 hours.
And or is there any submission other than just having it all up on Git?
Have it up on Git.
Okay.
And whatever was checked in as the last is what you went with the date.
That's the nice thing is I can see the exact version. If you want to check in something afterwards,
really?
I might consume the version afterwards.
Really?
I could, but I can see exactly what version was available at that time period.
Very crafty because the graphs in Git show all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't have to have
it.
It's like, I just look at your repository. It's all there.
Yeah, except for the npm commit, which.
Holy shit, 80,000 lines of code. This guy's really, you know.
According to GitHub, 100% of our code was written by someone else. Like, it's just percentage wise, the amount of code that we pulled in. Versus the amount of code that we've written line-wise.
And that's the way for most modern applications. You stand on the shoulder of giants.
Like,
well, actually, it's not so much giants. It's lots and lots of midgets, I think, all the way. But they're big shoulders in the end.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, so it's...
So we
something my computer science professor told me once.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But these, what I'm saying is, you know, you look at all this stuff that's been created. There's all kinds of, you know, things to use, and you should use them, and that's good. Now, okay, so I've got a couple of minutes left. One thing I could do, so I've got to cover a bit more about databases and try to kind of give you some things about schema design and things. And I want to cover some about, I'm thinking about covering, doing the stuff we've been doing in other languages.
Ruby.
And also finishing addressing all your questions. That's the first thing on your list,
Ruby.
To finish the question.
Ruby. No.
Java is the obvious one.
Java, really?
Yeah,
but only boring
CPU.
Corporate.
There actually are node-like frameworks for Java. So there's actually a Vert. Is in particular. Now, what's really funny is when you start looking at the Java-based ones, they start doing node-like things, you go like, wow, Java really is ugly. At least that's my reaction, but I don't know what your reaction is. But so does that make sense, trying to look at other frameworks? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just like I spent a lot of time more trying to...
You spent so long time being like, node, that if we do anything else, it'll be like, oh, so...
Yeah.
More JavaScript? Go back.
Yeah.
Okay. What about so what about JavaScript do you want to learn now? And what pieces? I mean, now you've been trying to use it, right?
Like the more
functional programming? I mean, it's like, I mean, there's lots to talk about with Java, but some of the stuff, is, I mean, JavaScript, but I mean, a lot of it gets into... I want to talk about things that will be generally useful to you all, and... Yes?
I think it would be good if we could compare Node to, like, a bunch of other frameworks, like Django, Rails, and things like that.
Mm.
It would be useful because, like, Node is good, but it's not really very popular.
It's up and coming, but you're right. It's definitely not the way web apps are traditionally architected.
Yeah, a lot of those snazzy ones are Rails these days. Well, Ruby,
mm-hmm.
Rails.
It sounds like I need to talk some about choosing frameworks.
Yeah,
absolutely.
How to compare.
Like that whole, if you're doing this, you should probably use that.
Okay, I'll look at the questions and try to see what exactly I'll try to do. But I'll certainly want to cover some about the other competing frameworks and give you an idea of the space and stuff. Because, like, you know, what if you're going to use something like JSP or something?
Yeah.
what are you, you know, why, what was, what's cool about, you know, Java Server Pages or ASP or something, or, you know, what do these look like compared to what we're talking about? Honestly, I'll tell you that I look at this other stuff and I just go, ugh. I mean, they really are ugly. I mean, it's amazing how clean and just nice things like, you know, Node makes it all. It's, but I should explain why.
Although C sharp and .NET are pretty powerful and sort of standard, used a lot.
Used a lot. I mean, in some sense, they all let you build a web app, so power, what does it mean to be powerful?
Well, I mean, C sharp as a language provides a wide variety.
What does it mean for it to be powerful? They're all Turing complete. Anyway, so I will I'll work on that. So basically expect to see one other quiz which will be optional for you to do to kind of reinforce concepts here, but of course the things on that last quiz will be on the final. So think of this as kind of your thing to kind of see what the final is going to look like. And when I say optional, I mean you should take it. And I will drop the grade if it's too, if it lowers your average. So, which means that if you just don't do it and get a zero, then it won't drop your grade. Expect that to happen like next week. But then after that, but then otherwise, you should be working on getting your milestones done. And if you have, and that should be, and specific questions about that, let me know so I can try, you know, working on them.